From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to this remarkable program we call Coast to Coast AM. Later on tonight, astrology and transformation, and that includes you. Here's what's happening. Very sad story out of Pennsylvania tonight. A teenage boy wielding two nut kitchen knives went on a stabbing rampage at his high school in Murrysville, Pennsylvania, before being tackled by an assistant principal who saved more children. 20 students and a security officer at Franklin Regional Senior High School were either stabbed or slashed in the attack. The accused attacker has been identified as a 16-year-old, according to a criminal complaint made public. He was arraigned as an adult, faces 4 counts of attempted homicide, 21 counts of aggravated assault, and 1 count of possession of a weapon on school grounds. Again, what happened? What went wrong? Apparently, he was a loner. People said he was well-liked. His family in shock, saying they never saw this coming. Dr. Peter Bregan, of course, psychiatrist. Peter, I don't think we know whether he was on drugs or not at this point, but another tragedy in schools. My gosh, what's going on?
Well, we really need to wait on more information. There's, you know, other reports that he actually had been making death threats, that it was common knowledge that he was making death threats, also that he was being bullied, and then there are other reports that he wasn't being bullied. But, George, it is. It's scary. It's frightening. This is a very good school. This is a school with a 98% graduation rate, which is extraordinarily high. It's a community with a lower than average crime rate. So this is really a kind of a shock at the heart of America. I don't think we know at this point what's going on. Other than what you mentioned, he's got that profile
yep.
of being a quiet kid, which is often a kid who's harboring resentments. He's harboring a lot of anger and rage about something, but we don't know what.
And the family said, we never saw this coming. How can a family not see this?
Well, usually there will be signals, and we may find out that the family actually had some hints that things were going on. It would be very unusual for the boy not to have been making threats or collecting weapons or feeling bullied. That would be all very unusual, and I think we just have to wait and see about it. But, you know, it really raises the questions about, I mean, this is an evening for frustration, not answers. I mean, they had a lot of school security at this school. They didn't have these, metal detectors, but, you know, there were security guards and the police officer on duty at the time. I mean, it just raises a lot of questions about what can be done, and we have to wait for more information at this point.
All right, Peter, monitor the story for us, and let's see what happens in the coming days. And, of course, this was done with 2 8-inch kitchen knives, not guns, kitchen knives. John Lott, of course, author of More Guns, Less Crime. So are we going to have a national campaign now, John, to get rid of knives or what?
Well, there's even before this, there have already been a few politicians that have talked about regulating knives that people own. Look, even if one could get rid of all guns, there are many ways for people to go and attack. China, you regularly hear stories about dozens of people or many people who get killed in different type of knife attacks that occur there. I mean, the latest numbers are 24 people were injured in the stabbing attack, 5 of them critical. And it's just lucky that a couple didn't die, that there were people on the scene who knew what they needed to do medically that were able to apply the proper pressure to wounds. And also, it was just lucky that this student didn't know properly how to attack people with a knife rather than, you know, he was almost always slashing as opposed yeah. to actually stabbing the people there in their chest.
They said he was 16, looked like he was 12 years old. Another tragedy, John Lott, huh?
But it shows you even relatively small people that are relatively weaker physically, even with a knife, can do real damage. When you're dealing with somebody who has weapons, even a knife, other students weren't able to go and respond in some way to stop him. And we see the carnage that occurs there. And, we have a problem here, but I think people have, this teaches you, you just can't focus on the particular type of weapon that's used, that you have to realize it's deeper than that.
You got that right, John. Thank you so much. And another problem brewing in Nevada, a 2-decade-old battle between Nevada rancher and the Bureau of Land Management has resulted now in officials armed with machine guns surrounding the ranch, forcibly removing the owner's cattle. Let's hope it doesn't erupt into anything worse than this. Cliven Bundy is the last rancher in Clark County, Nevada. He's been fighting a one-man range war since 1993 when he decided to take a stand against the agency, refusing to pay fees for the right to graze on a ranch run by his family for centuries. And after years of court battles, the BLM secured a federal court order to have Bundy's trespass cattle, as they call it, forcibly removed with heavy artillery. But my gosh, what is going on in this country when they have to do this? Craig Hewlett, of course, is the expert for us and the author of The Hydra of Carnage. Craig, this is unbelievable. I'm not going to say this is quite Waco all over again, but this is happening in this country, and I just can't understand it.
Well, I think the worst part about it is that he has been fighting for 2 decades, and nobody has really come forward to help him very much. And now that he's pleading for help, it's, you know, the militarization of our law enforcement, everybody's pretty much aware of it at this point. And they do seem to be using a pretty aggressive tactic. But in defense of law enforcement, they're seizing the cattle, not really to punish him, but it's under a court order to auction the cattle to pay for the fines and the fees that he failed to pay.
Yeah.
So the law isn't on his side, unfortunately. So it's a little difficult for me to step into this and side with him. As bad as it is, these kinds of things happen all over this country all the time. I keep a short database within Casey and Associates that we monitor ongoing police brutality, shootings of innocent people. And it has happened now so often, these kinds of things escalate and innocent people die at the hands of law enforcement. It's staggering now, the number. And in Albuquerque alone, there's more people been killed by law enforcement than in New York City.
Oh, my God.
So these kinds of things are escalating, and law enforcement is taking a very militarized approach to it. I pity the guy. I do feel compassion for what's happened to him and his family. They've been ranching since 1877. But unfortunately, for 20 years he's been in this fight, and the court has ruled against him in each and every occasion. And I hope he isn't thinking the only way out is suicide by cop.
No, I hope you're right. Craig, thanks. Let's watch this story unfold as well. My gosh. All over the place. The number of people believed to have been killed by the Ebola virus in Guinea has now passed 100. It was one of the most challenging Ebola outbreaks that they have ever seen, and it could take another 4 months to contain, according to the World Health Organization. The virus has now killed 101 people in Guinea and 10 people in Liberia. My gosh. The atomic age, that is something that we have been living in for some time now. Up next, we talk with Craig Nelson back on Coast to Coast. It's called The Age of Radiance, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. He was with me back in 2009 as we talked about his first work, Rocket Man. He, of course, is the author of that bestseller, as well as Thomas Paine, Enlightenment. We're going to be talking with Craig Nelson about The Age of Radiance, the epic rise and dramatic fall of the atomic era. As you all know, we entered the atomic era in the 40s during World War II, and we've never looked back. Craig, interesting research here. Welcome back. How are you?
Thank you so much. I love this show. I'm so glad to be back.
Okay, now, The Age of Radiance. Tell me a little bit about your research.
Well, I decided to look into this again because when I did Rocket Man, I was really taken up with the fact, on the one hand, you have this huge epic story, the story of going from, Sputnik to landing on the moon. in just a matter of years. And you had all of this stuff where there was an intersection of science and business and government and the military. And all this comes to play all over again with the Age of Radiance, the whole story of how we started with radiation, which began with a out-of-the-way, washed-up guy in 1895. He's 50 years old. His career as a physicist is really over. He's teaching at the University of Würzburg, and he is charging vacuum tubes with huge power voltages of electricity. And at one moment, he's turned off all the lights in the lab to sort of monitor this vacuum tube, and his hand happens to fall between the vacuum tube and a screen, and he sees the bones in his hand. And he thinks he's going crazy, and he gets so upset that the only way he can describe to anyone what he has seen is to call these rays X, X meaning the unknown in science, and that's why we call them X-rays.
And we have never looked back. But you talk about the fact about the dramatic rise and the fall of the atomic era. What's the fall, Craig?
Well, I really believe we're in the twilight of the atomic age for two reasons. You know, right now the U.S. spends $10 billion a year on its nuclear weapons program. We haven't used a nuclear weapon in since 1945, as you know. But we're still spending this kind of money, and I think we're in the twilight of that. And I think we're in the twilight of atomic power as well.
All right. Now, since 1945, when we dropped the atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, we have been building and building more and more atomic weapons. So were the Soviets at the time. Now Israel has them. China has them. North Korea, India, Pakistan. If we back up a little bit in the atomic era, will these countries back up too, or will they keep going forward?
I don't think we're ever going to get rid of them entirely. There is a program called Zero Nuclear Weapons, and actually everyone from Henry Kissinger to a whole raft of politicians have signed on to that. I don't believe we're going to get to zero. I think at least Israel will always want to have at least one or two, you know. But the United States doesn't need to be spending $10 billion a year on this, and I think it's going to be fading into insignificance when people... It'll start being something like, you know, we don't have blunderbusses and trebuchets anymore either, right?
Yeah,
it'll be
true.
Like an old-fashioned, ridiculous weapon.
When you were doing your research, was there anything there that kind of shocked you?
The entire basic idea shocked me, actually. I thought that radiation was extremely rare and extremely dangerous. I thought you had to go to a nuclear weapons plant or an atomic power plant to be in touch with radiation. And I thought, you know, a little tiny bit would give you cancer, right? And I found out instead that it's everywhere. It's falling down on us from cosmic rays. It's rising up at us from uranium decaying in the bedrock. It's in kitty litter and adobe and granite. It's in microwave ovens and smoke detectors. Your pets are radioactive. Your family's radioactive. In fact, every single human being is radioactive. And when we get together, we irradiate each other. So the danger is not in radiation itself. It's in the quantity.
Do we know?
And like all poisons, it's the dose.
And with this, though, Craig, do we really know what the long-term outlook to exposure to this is going to do to us?
Well, we have two studies that have been going on for decades now. One is the study of what the outcome of Chernobyl. And here in the worst nuclear disaster of all time, the total death toll is 75. 58 of the people were either plant workers or first responders. And if they had had better protection and better information and better medical care, a lot of those deaths could have been prevented. And the other 17 were the children of families who did not evacuate the zone and who drank the milk of contaminated cows. And if they had had better health care and better services, those deaths could have been prevented too. So the worst nuclear disaster in history that spread a cloud the size of 400 Hiroshimas over all of Europe, only 75 people died.
That we know of. That could be accounted for. But what about the countless number, Craig, that may have died, and you just have no idea?
Well, there's an interesting coincidence about that. One of the big critics of those figures, and those are UN figures, United Nations figures, so there's no reason for them to underestimate the number, frankly. But anyway, that 75, that's the UN's estimate. One critic of those figures who's very anti-nuclear said that he thinks 16,000 people are going to eventually die in Europe because of advanced cancers from this cloud. Well, that number, coincidentally, is how many people die every year in the United States from exposure to the air pollution caused by using coal to produce electricity.
Could you call, atomic weapons of mass destruction, or would you say that they could be weapons of peace?
Well, this is a funny coincidence. One of the great brain twisters in the history of the Cold War is the fact that Alfred Nobel, whose oil fortune founds the Nobel Peace Prize and who invented dynamite and TNT, as we all know, he said that his great dream was to come up with a weapon that was so powerful that it would make war impossible. And many people sincerely believe that thermonuclear weapons owned by France, China, the U.S., the USSR, England, every major player during the Cold War had an atomic weapons cache. But the fact that all of us had those weapons meant that we never had World War III. And in fact, one of the interesting moments in the book is when Ronald Reagan goes to see Margaret Thatcher and he says, "My great dream is to end all nuclear weapons." And she goes, "Are you crazy? What do you think is keeping everybody at peace?" In the entire Cold War, the only fighting that the U.S. and the USSR did directly were a couple of dogfights between fighter pilots during Korea, and that's it. So a lot of people think that because of that, the inventors of thermonuclear weapons deserve the Nobel Peace Prize.
Crick, she was right, because the only battles that we do are with countries that don't have nukes.
And almost every time, almost every occasion when the country with the nukes goes up with the country against that has no nukes, the one without the nukes wins. Or at least having nuclear weapons doesn't help. So, having nuclear weapons didn't help America and Vietnam, and it didn't help the French in Algeria, and it didn't help the Soviets in Afghanistan. And there's one example after the next you can pick from those.
Where is science taking us in the atomic age? What's
what I'm really hoping is that we have a technological breakthrough and that we come up with a source of energy that is inexpensive and safe. All right? Because right now, we have to stop. We have to get off petroleum and coal at some point. People are upset about fracking. Natural gas is a wonderful thing, but people are upset about fracking. And we don't have the technology in solar or hydro or wind that is efficient enough to give us enough of the energy that we need. So right now what's going on is we have the Chinese are trying to develop something called pebble bed reactors, which are very safe if it works. And then Bill Gates has his money with something called a traveling water reactor, which are very small reactors. So they're much safer because they're so tiny. And then there's a huge multi-country, 35-country operation going on in the south of France called ITER, and they're trying to create fusion energy, fusion being what powers those enormous thermonuclear weapons that we have.
I hope that something of this works
out, really, because we need an answer to this problem. It's a much bigger problem than anybody imagines.
I had a guest on a couple days ago who just went ballistic when we talked about, nuclear power plants. And he just thinks they are ludicrous, that they could be the destruction of all mankind. What do you think of that?
Well, he's imagining a much greater problem than really exists. If you look at the news coming back from Japan to America, if you look at the news coverage of what they call 3/11, March 2011 in Japan, in America, Fukushima. You would think that the big problem was Fukushima and the tsunami was nothing, whereas nobody died at Fukushima and.
I think we may have lost you, Craig.
Oh, really?
Oh, there you are. Nope, you're back.
Okay. All right.
Hey, let me ask you, do you have call waiting by any chance?
No.
Okay. I thought maybe somebody called you or something and knocked you off for a little bit. Okay.
Yeah.
But you're about ready to say something about the tsunami in Fukushima.
We have a mythology that we've built up about nuclear. And I say it's because we learned about nuclear science by looking at pictures and movies of the victims of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And then we learned about nuclear power from Three Mile Island and the China Syndrome. That was a funny coincidence
right.
that happened in America when the Three Mile Island meltdown happened. The movie The China Syndrome was also playing at the same time. So a lot of people have a mythology about power plants, atomic power plants, that's wildly exaggerated considering what they actually do. So if you look at the press in America, the coverage, the news coverage of Fukushima, you would think that Fukushima was a terrible disaster and the tsunami wasn't a big deal. But in fact, nobody died at Fukushima and 18,000 people died in the tsunami.
Hold on. We're going to talk more about this when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We have a split show for you tonight. So next hour, we'll take calls with Craig Nelson as we talk about the atomic age. Craig, let's talk a little bit about Chernobyl, Fukushima, of course, Three Mile Island. And you are absolutely right. Thousands and thousands of people died from the Fukushima horrible tsunami. But is it not too early yet because of the potential loss of lives because of the radiation leaks and fallout? Doesn't it take time?
Well, no, because what has happened is that the radiation from Fukushima, they didn't have any fallout in the air because they had containment domes keeping all that in. And the explosions that you saw and the carnage of the pictures was all taking place away from the reactors. But the reactors did melt down, and I believe that it's going to contaminate the water supply so that they will have to have a zone of alienation where they don't allow people to live there just like they have at Chernobyl. But right now, you can go be a tourist in Chernobyl if you want. I recommend that if you go, when the signs that say keep off the grass, you do keep off that grass, and I don't think you should eat the local food. But you can go visit Chernobyl right now.
I don't think I'd visit. Now, what about the possibilities of any contamination coming from Fukushima hitting the west coast of the United States, which is a concern by some of those people who live there?
Right. It's not remotely possible. And the reason we know that is because, in fact, we've just recently had a guy who took one of those little submersibles and he went to visit Bikini. And the Bikini Atoll is where the United States detonated dozens upon dozens of thermonuclear weapons, tremendously more radioactive than anything that Fukushima could ever do. And he wasn't able to find any radiation there at all because the ocean had so diluted it. And we're talking about a number of ships that were sunk, metal, that should have retained, so that you would have thought would have retained something. The only radiation he could find was in the tombstones on the island because they're made out of sandstone. So the concept that the radiation going into the Pacific is going to travel across the Pacific and hit the United States is not possible. However, right now, we already know that air pollution from China and its dirty coal is hitting the California coast. So that's a problem.
Are we, regardless of how we do it, are we going to kill ourselves off because of some kind of pollution or some kind of contamination?
Yes, we've got to solve this problem. So anyone who's working on their basement on inventing things, please invent a new source of energy.
Yeah, really, and a cheap source. I mean, I would love to see every house have its own little power supply of cheap, efficient energy. You think that's possible?
Absolutely. It's really terrible. And, the fact that air pollution can travel all the way from China to California is just it just shows you how bad things are over there.
In your book, The Age of Radiance, you spent a lot of time dealing with movies and Hollywood and how it ties into the atomic age. What were some of your favorites?
Well, you're going to die when you hear this. I don't know how many listeners are familiar with the movie Dr. Strangelove.
It's old. One of the old classics.
That much anymore. It's one of my favorite movies of all time, and I always thought it was this wild, outrageous satire, right? Well, it turns out you can practically watch it as a historical documentary. Because there's so much in it. First of all of the people spouting off how, it'll be okay to have nuclear Armageddon. Only maybe 20 million people will die, tops. And then we can put the best of America hiding in mine shafts with two women for every man and repopulate the world. And you would think this is the wildest stuff you ever heard. Well, it turned out that the most serious nuclear theoretician of that time wrote all these things in his book. And so much of it was taken that he told the director he wanted royalties.
Were any of the characters in the movie, you know, Peter Sellers was in it, George C. Scott, were any of those characters based on real-life people?
Yeah. Dr. Strangelove, the main Peter Sellers character, was based on a cross of a number of people. This theoretician, who is a guy named Herman Kahn, combined with Werner von Braun, who brought the rocket to America from Nazi Germany, and Edward Teller, who co-invented the thermonuclear bomb. And one of my favorite things about Edward Teller is that when he first started coming up with the idea for the hydrogen or fusion bomb, he started making a list of his favorite bomb ideas. And the best bomb idea he came up with was something he called the backyard bomb. And this was a bomb that was so huge and would kill so many people that you didn't need to take it and drop it on your enemy. You could just set it off in your backyard, the backyard bomb. So that kind of stuff is going on. And you know, we think Dr. Strangelove is this wild exaggeration. And instead, the backyard bomb is as good as anything in the movie.
Were you around during the Cuban Missile Crisis? I was 12 years old.
I was the same age as you, and but I remember it well because we lived in Houston, so a lot of the Army stuff that was going on in Florida was also going on in Texas. And in fact, the hotline that the president and the Kremlin uses in Dr. Strangelove did not become invented until after the Cuban Missile Crisis, because a big part of that crisis was them sending these telexes back and forth, which were then translated and transcribed. It had to be retyped, and there was this tremendous delay in negotiation over that, and they realized something had to be done to fix that.
How does this hotline system truly work? I mean, in this era now of text messaging and instant communication, do we even really need a hotline anymore?
Probably not, but at least in fact, it comes in really handy to have a telephone that goes directly to someone in charge over there, because we've had a number of really frightening near war experiences where the Soviets have thought they were being invaded, and it turned out to be Norwegian weather balloons and flocks of geese. And then we thought we were being invaded, and it turned out to be training tapes that they had put in by mistake. There was an unbelievably terrifying moment where Brzezinski, during the National Security Advisor during the Carter administration, is called and told that 1,200 Soviet missiles have been launched against the United States. And so he sits there to get waiting for the confirmation, and 30 minutes later, they call him and go, "No, we were wrong. It's not 1,200. It's 12,000. So then he's waiting for the final confirmation before he calls Carter, and he's sitting there, and he's not waking up his wife because he's assuming they're both going to die. And just as he's getting, like, seconds before he calls Carter to tell him it's the end of the world, they call him back and go, "Oh, it was all a mistake. We put in training tapes."
It could be a mistake like that, Greg, that does us in. You know that?
Absolutely. And another great irony in the Cold War is the fact that 5 months after we bombed Hiroshima, they had a terrible typhoon and 5,000 people died. But the aftermath of that typhoon washed away all of the radiation that we had dropped with that bomb. And now Hiroshima is completely clean. Over 1 million people live there. Well, unfortunately, we did not have a typhoon hit Nevada. And all of those atomic tests we did out in Nevada have contaminated the entire continent, and 11,000 Americans die every year from the pollution caused by those tests from decades ago. And now Nevada is in much worse shape radiologically than Hiroshima.
I bet if we had little Geiger counters and walked around there, they would have incredible readings then still.
Las Vegas used to have it as a tourist attraction. You could come gamble and then watch atomic bombs go off, you know, which you can't imagine now. I can't even get you to go to Chernobyl.
No, I'm not going to Chernobyl. No way. So where does this all head? I mean, you're the expert here. What path are we going down?
Well, on the one hand, what I would like people to know is that our fears about atomic power plants are exaggerated, but not the fact that every time there's an accident, the government and the industry does every bad thing in the book. You know, they aren't transparent. They aren't forthcoming. They're so worried about causing panic that they go the opposite and lie about everything. And I think that they have so degraded everyone's thinking about nuclear power that we just think they're completely untrustworthy and we can't trust them to do any of this.
I think
nuclear power, unless we have one of these technological breakthroughs, is on its way out. And I think atomic weapons, at some point, people are going to say, I don't want to spend $10 billion a year on atomic weapons for a system against the Soviet Union when the Soviet Union no longer exists. So why I say we're in the twilight of the atomic era.
We've got about, 120 nuclear power plants in this country?
Yeah.
Something like that? And,
and 12 of them have that scary thing where they keep the nuclear waste, because Yucca Mountain didn't go through. 12 of them keep their nuclear waste in swimming pool-type containers that are more or less out in the open. They're not protected seriously in any way. And that's really scary.
Craig, we've talked a lot about the EMPs, electromagnetic pulses, either from the sun or the detonation of a nuke in the atmosphere that could, you know, knock out our grid and, you know, change our lifestyle for years and years to come. I think that's a very serious possibility. Did you look at that at all as something in this age of radiance?
Well, I didn't for this book, but I did it for the last book, because I was trying to find out what was going on with the Pentagon and space research. And boy, are they tight-lipped about this. But anyway, as far as what I can tell, if anybody can launch one of these weapons, it's us, you know. So I think we're the one with the state of the art in launching that kind of weapon, frankly.
Where do we head? What's the future going to hold? Not with just the nuclear power, but with weaponry as well. Where are we going?
I think that, you know, many countries will have a small nuclear arsenal that will be insignificant and they will never be used. And that, you know, France loves nuclear power, so they'll be going. That it would actually be a step forward for Vietnam and China and many Southeast Asian countries to leave behind coal and go to nuclear, and that's what they want to do. But other than that, it's going to fade out in a way, and it will be insignificant. Sort of a symbol of all this that I have at the end of the book, where there's this company called Picture Parade, and they made a little comic book to sell to children about this little boy who has a dog, and he doesn't have a dog leash, and the dog runs off into the Nevada test site and comes out covered with radioactive dust, so they have to keep the dust at the test site for a week. And then, and during the week, he doesn't have his dog. He learns all about the wonders of the atomic world to come. And it's supposed to be this very upbeat comic book that you buy and educate children with it about the atomic power and atomic and nuclear science. But what happened is the cover shows this boy who sort of looks like the puppet Howdy Doody and his dog in front of one of the Nevada test site explosions.
How bizarre.
That became a symbol during the Cold War of, like, these were the only survivors left. But today it's like a joke. You can buy it on a mouse pad. So that's where I think we are with the atomic age.
If you had your way, you'd do away with coal power and nuke power, both?
No, I actually think nuclear. I'd much rather live next to a nuclear power plant than a coal power plant myself.
You would.
So I don't think it's as bad as other people say it is. You know, even if those UN figures are too low, even if that 75 number from Chernobyl is too low, 8,000 people died because of Bhopal, and no one is saying we should give up fertilizer. Right.
Okay, why coal plant? What scares you about the coal plant?
Because it produces so much pollution that it's killing people off with the pollution. That's the pollution that's coming over China. Beijing practically looks like nuclear winter now, because the air is so polluted between being next to the Gobi Desert and the coal they use. And that's the air pollution that's attacking California from China.
Can't they clean it up a little bit? Can't they filter it?
The problem with it is that it produces particles that are so tiny they easily lodge in your lungs. Coal is a real scary thing. But it's not exciting like nuclear. Nuclear is creepy because it's sort of radioactive things, you know. I think they disturb us because they're in a way they're sort of alive but not alive at the same time. They're like zombie things. So I think that's why people are creeped out by it, nuclear things.
You got a lot of people from the coal industry, though, who would jump you on this one, wouldn't they?
Well, the nuclear people want to jump me, too, because I'm telling them they're going to fade into insignificance because they've done such a bad job handling every problem. Every time they have a problem, they mess it up, and that's, you know, it's ridiculous.
In a big way, too. You'd mentioned cold fusion. Now, isn't that clean? Isn't that a clean source of energy?
Well, no, the cold fusion doesn't exist.
No, we don't have it yet, but we could get
it. Yeah, it doesn't seem so. But anyway, regular fusion, if they ever got that to work, it's the power that powers the sun. And if they ever got that to work, that would be fantastic. So I'm hoping the people in France pull this off.
What do you think about solar power?
Well, I think it's spectacular, except that you need to have you need to cover the entire western desert of America to produce enough power for the rest of the West in America. It's not the technology isn't producing enough from wind and hydro and solar to make up for what we use with coal and oil.
You've got somebody running North Korea right now, Kim Jong-un, who I think is nuts. I think he's insane. Yet, he's got nukes. What happens, Craig, when we have people like that controlling these nuclear weapons?
Well, we've had that fear for 50 years now. When Stalin got nuclear weapons, and then Mao got nuclear weapons, those were two of the biggest mass murderers in history. And everyone was terrified about that. And then, of course, many Arabs were terrified when Israel got nuclear weapons. And then when Pakistan got terrified when India got nuclear weapons, and India got terrified back when Pakistan had nuclear weapons. So every single step along the way, we're frightened that, the crazy mullahs in Iran are going to have nuclear weapons. But in fact, no one ever uses these weapons.
Not yet, anyways. Except us.
Well, can you imagine, if anyone used a nuclear weapon against the United States, if they used any kind of missile, we would know where it came from because we know how to measure the arc of a missile and trace it back to where it's from. And we know where every single piece of fissile fuel comes from. We can analyze it and figure out where it comes from.
Right.
Now, I'm sure you've gone to an action-adventure movie, Avengers movie or one of these comic strip movies. Can you imagine how poor what the response of the United States Pentagon would be if someone launched a dirty bomb or dropped a nuclear missile on us?
Oh, it would be unbelievable if we knew where it came from.
It would be the greatest show in town. But anyway, so it's just not going to happen.
Are
fearful of dirty bombs. The greatest attack and terrorist attack in American history was done with box cutters. The next thing isn't going to be nuclear physics.
Well, I hope you're right, Craig. Craig, by the way, with your book, The Age of Radiance, you've got a little speaking tour coming up. Do you have the list on your website, or do you want to?
I do. It's craignelson.us, and I'll be in D.C. this week, and then I'm doing the New York Public Library, and I'm doing the Smithsonian, and I'm coming to Pittsburgh, so I'm going all over the place. So come on out. We'll have a great time of love, sex, and physics. You're not going to believe what it's like. It's a ton of fun.
Maybe not in that order either, right?
Exactly.
How's the response been to the work, The Age of Radiance?
You would think I'm paying these people to give me these reviews. They've just been fantastic. And people can't believe that I wrote a book about nuclear physics you can read on a plane. And I said, well, that's the idea. That's what I do for a living. You can read all my books on a plane.
Yes, that is the one thing I like about you. You make things understandable to people. And it's not way over people's heads. And
that's exactly the idea. It's like, it's like the greatest cover you ever saw. It's made with this metallic ink and it's laser printing. So it like radiates all by itself. So that's worth like $5. And then, on sale, it's like $20 total. So you pay $5 for the cover and then you pay $15 for 5 nights of a great read. And then you get an education for free. It's a really good deal.
So have you been to Chernobyl yourself?
No, unfortunately, I wasn't able to fit that in. I went to do what were all the archives with the scientists, because at that time, you could not actually go see the reactor. You can go see it now, but at that time, you couldn't. So that's why I didn't bother going.
Would you ever go?
I'd love to go, yeah. I don't, if you take the proper... the thing about all of this is this, all right? The radiation that comes out First of all, let me explain how radiation works.
Hold on for a second, Craig. We'll get right into that, and we'll take some phone calls with you. Final hour to go with Craig Nelson on Coast to Coast AM.